You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArian.com.
This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and we are here to close out another exciting week of The Daily Traditionalist. So I have on the line today, as my co-host, the one, the only, Mr. Matthew Parrott. So Mr. Parrott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Matt. How are you doing?
Oh, just another day in paradise. So since we've... Well, yeah, exactly. I'm in God's country. Something I wanted to talk about, and we actually, as proof that I should be allowed around, I can be around microphones, but I should not be allowed around, like, actually doing technology. We actually, recorded a show not too long ago that ended up, not getting recorded, and it was a great monologue and dialogue between you and I, but, the listeners didn't get to hear it, so I, that's proof that that's why Sven, with all the other work he does, is so crucial when it comes to running the technology. We all can't do everything. I can do a lot of things, but technology's not one of them.
Now, I'm pretty sure I roasted you pretty hard during that podcast, and I suspect that you deleted it because I roasted you that hard.
I'm neither going to confirm nor deny. I guess we're really just going to have to, God knows the answer to that question.
And you.
And me. But, only he knows my heart. So anyway, question for you, kind of to kick things off, because John Friend and I, usually he's my Friday co-host, but he's busy with a few things right now, a lot of different projects. We're hopefully going to have him back next week. But for now, a big question is, it's all wrapped up. Hillary has enough delegates. Trump has enough delegates. It's all over. The attempted third party had an abortion, basically, with Bill Kristol, and now it is officially a Trump Hillary matchup. So give me your wise thoughts and prognostications on how this election season is going to go and what this means for us.
Well, I mean, the big picture is this election season started out with dozens of big names, really on both sides. And almost all of them were talking about ideas. We're talking about policy. We're talking about abstractions. And only two candidates focused on identity politics. Hillary, from the very beginning, her entire platform was, hey, women and minorities and immigrants, we're going to take more resources from white men. That's sort of been her whole message, is focusing on those groups and talking about how white men, white American men, owe them more stuff. And there's one other candidate who also sort of focused on identity, and he actually took the opposite tack and focused almost entirely on the concerns of white men, which was very much a new thing in American politics, really since the Dixiecrat phenomenon. Where white men, as white men, have actually started to be pandered to as an identity group, and that's Donald Trump. And now only those two remain, which I think says a lot about how America is becoming more and more of a sort of a factional empire with different tribes competing, rather than, you listen to baby boomers, and you can tell how frustrated they are by this. How America's become all these, like, different competing factions, and they wish it weren't like that, but they're the ones who sort of helped it become this way.
I just want to throw in, that's where the radical left, of course, acknowledges that conservatism is racial identity politics without being honest about it. I mean, states' rights, it's fine to watch desegregation protests in the 50s where they've got Gadsden flags, and then, fast forward to, the Tea Party in 2010, like, no, we just believe in states' rights. You'd ask a Dixiecrat, like, no, we believe in states' rights. Libertarianism is like a bizarro burn order, like a retreating army, just trying to torch all the social services and the buses and everything that is between the non-white city and the majority white suburbs, just trying to lay everything to the torch so the non-whites can't follow you. Everything becomes identity politics, even when you're dressing it up with the Von Mises Institute.
Well, I mean, it is. And what's funny is the entire political class, not just the Democrats, have been kind of partying like it's 2042. I mean, you listen to the Republican strategists. I always wonder where you apply to become a Republican strategist. You listen to them talk. They act like we're already a disempowered minority without any options but to play ball with these powerful majorities. And the Democrats act like they can completely throw the white working class under the bus and still win at a national level. And it's not 2042 yet. And in fact, in 2042 is when, you know, they'll be at the 50% mark totally, which means that among people who are legally eligible to vote, and of course, older people are more inclined to vote than younger people who are inclined to vote, even 2042, white people are still going to be a part of the democratic political process. These people are just got way ahead of themselves, and there's, you know, this backlash where white people are like, hey, hang on, we're not completely dead yet. You know, we still actually exist and have interests. Hold up, you know?
Well, no, I mean, we're supposed to be the in the system of the gimme dats. We're just supposed to be like a vending machine. Like we're just supposed to you know, every other group is supposed to be able to go and be like, I want more social spending, A7. And then like, you know, another 10 million white taxpayers' paychecks like fall down. It's like, oh, you know, like, you know, come, I want more, you know, I want more road projects, da, da, da. And then like, you know, as we start to slowly dry up, that I feel like the current establishment doesn't realize, you know, by partying like it's 2042, that we as a people, there's a limited amount of stuff you can take from us. Eventually, you've taken everything. You've taken our bird and our bush. And I don't think they realize that. I think they just it was actually kind of funny. I was talking with one of our party comrades about, I'll go full dork here for a second, but, you know, the orcs in Warhammer 40K, Warhammer Fantasy, they have no logic, they have no reason, they don't build cities, they just go on a wall, which is just like locusts, as they go and do warfare and just steal and loot everything they can from all the surrounding peoples. And that's what, that's like what multicultural America is. It's just one giant wall of just these assembled groups of multiculturalism just ransacking everything we've created and then telling us we're supposed to be okay with it.
Well, I think part of the missed opportunity on the left, and kind of goes into the psychology of both the left and the right, I think they could have gotten away with it for decades more had they not insisted on the humiliation. White people kind of reminds me of me. Like I'm a total schmuck. But if I realize that I'm being actively taken advantage of by people who don't respect me, that's a different game. And I think white people, if minorities had maintained their whole, like, boy, we just need a hand up, you know, we're struggling here, you know, we're pushed down the past, and we're going to work together towards the future. I think if that had been the message, I think white people would have played along forever. I think there's our people are such a gullible, sort of nobly oriented people. But with Barack Obama's, like, constant humiliation and actively bragging about how they're going to be stronger, and actively, like, all the little things from the Confederate flag on down to, like, Michelle Obama complaining about how her White House was built by slaves, and just constantly making it clear that they're not engaging us in good faith, that they plan to replace us, they were planning to attack us, and they plan on, as soon as they get the upper hand, harming us.
It's kind of like a reverse American History X, where you've got some spiny little Jew taking his shirt off at the dinner table, pointing to a Star of David and saying to white people, "Not welcome."
Exactly. Yeah. You know, they, like I said, they're partying like it's 2042. Like they already have the upper hand. And you know, it's kind of like a bunch of children dancing on a hibernating bear, thinking that they killed it. And, you know, eventually if you keep poking it, you know, pulling its mouth open and stuff, you're going to wake it up and they're going to find out that no, this bear was not dead. It was hibernating and you're all screwed.
Yeah, it's been a really long 71 years of hibernation, but you know, we're going to be massively hungry and ready to you know, you wake up and the cave has been decorated with like pornography and like freaking like feminist writings, and you know, they've set up to have a bunch of like hipsters on typewriters in the bear cave, really enjoying the natural you know, aesthetic of the bear cave, and eventually we're just gonna have to, you know, it's like that classic video that's got millions of hits now, you know, the lion, you know, with the jackals, and everyone's surrounding the lion, and as the lion goes, you know, sometimes that lion has to get up and just tear the shit out of everyone else. You know, I don't like to swear on my show, but when it comes to talking about the white race, you know, we are like a lion. We put up with a lot. We put up with the hyenas. We put up with the vultures and everything coming around us. And there just comes that time where you just need to stand up and you need to just say this. You're not allowed to do this anymore. Get out, sort of thing. So,
it brings to mind the Wrath of the Awakened Saxon by Rudyard Kipling. You know, it takes a long time to make the Saxon start hating, but once he does, you know, you're in trouble. And they don't understand our psychology. Everybody kind of projects their own psychology. I think these minorities just kind of see us as a sad, sickly, weak people. And I mean, there's some truth to that relative to our ancestors and stuff. But once we get going, it will not be easy to stop us.
Well, and that's the thing. So moving forward, it's something I actually got sent by a friend of mine, Matt Hale. He was in prison. Actually, he transferred now to medium security prison. Finally getting to leave Colorado.
In Indiana. So,
yeah, coming to Indiana. It's the promised land. And his book, if you look at the World Church, the Creator for a long time, you know, as a Christian, I've got some serious qualms and issues, but, it seems that he's evolved a little bit and understand the difference between modernist Christianity and traditional Christianity, which is really, that's huge. But one thing I want to talk about with you, because, you know, I've had Harold Covington on the show of the Northwest Front, discussion how secession is the only option for the white race in North America. In Europe, it's a different game because Germans live in Germany, Romanians live in Romania. I mean, things like that. They've got this ancestral land, but we're kind of, it's almost like the gold miners, you know, who went up to Alaska. You know, yeah, we're staking our claim. This is still a new, you know, it's a newly settled area in regards to human history. So, you know, it's like we kind of have to go on a gold rush here and stake our claim. But Matt Hale was talking about how secession, due to the fact that demographics are destiny, we can't lie about the numbers. We can't tell ourselves and pat ourselves on the back that we're going to go and remove 100, you know, upwards estimates of 130, 140 million non-whites from America. It's not going to happen. It's not realistic. And then we end up getting into this like giant dinosaur battle. Then, you know, it's kind of like then they're, you know, there's 100 million, 140 million of them here, but then there's 6 billion of them, in the rest of the planet. The best way for us and our people long term, especially here in the United States, is to not have a supremacist mindset of we're going to kick everyone out and we're going to be, you know, super mean and stuff. It's just opting out of multiculturalism to have our own home. But seeing Matt Hale become a secessionist, of course, the Northwest Front, the League, our movement, everyone seems to be basically getting on board with this idea, kind of like is upset about Donald Trump. If he does his policies on illegal immigrants, it's like putting a tourniquet on a wound so you don't bleed out while the doctor fixes the wound. But we'll still have a bullet inside us, even if he does every one of his policies that he says he'll do. So how do we actualize? You are also the author of Who's Your Nation, a book that inspired me. And I think I've got like, you know, some of the last copies that are in a stockpile. But it's absolutely an amazing book about the idea about how independence is key to our people in the long term. I talked about this on my show earlier this week. So I want to give you my perspective on, in current America, is secession the right path forward, the creation of an ethno state, and how do you see us being able to achieve that with having every other ethnic group be able to get their own space so we're not involved in some, you know, horrific conflicts, that everyone can kind of respect one another and just have an amicable divorce from multiculturalism. So I want to know your thoughts on that.
Well, first of all, my groundbreaking book, Who's Your Nation, had a tremendous impact on all four people who read it.
well, all of them are party members.
Yeah. But if you read this Bank Underground book, that you got to kind of be an insider to get your hands on, it will, you know. But anyway, no, it's no longer for sale. Sorry, guys. The big thing is, if you look at the big picture, what's happening with technology, what's happening with geopolitics, what's happening with fourth generation warfare, is the sort of Westphalian or post-Westphalian megastate of like the United States, or like kind of what the European Union story is, are sort of becoming organically obsolete in and of themselves, and that it's less about secession than it is about just a general devolution of power to more local levels. And you see this. I mean, that is secessionism, but I don't think so much 1861, but think more like Napster. Think more like how all these industries and you know the financial industry and the government cartels will succumb to these same forces that, you know, like now there's not really any more rock stars, because the internet and how the internet has affected the music industry has permanently damaged the music industry and the mass society it went under. Now, rather than having like one large Aerosmith or the Beatles, I mean, I'm listening to Nazi vaporwave while I'm going down the road. you're listening to some sort of edgy alt country stuff while going down the road. You know, Thomas is big on the retro wave. You know, there's all these little niche thing. It's not just like that. You know, to bring up an uncomfortable topic, that's true. The pornography industry. When you know, back in the 90s, back before you were born, I'm an old man. You had a cartel of largely Jewish-owned pornography corporations pushing this one mass society pornography thing. And what's happened is that industry has largely imploded. The major, you know, like Playboy magazine has gone, well, they haven't gone out of business, but they went away from pornography altogether just to stay in business. All these different franchises and stuff are just dead. The industry is nothing like it was, because the internet resulted in a devolution where just any creeper with a cell phone camera can do their own. And to some extent, that's what you're going to see in sovereignty, self-government, self-determination. You're going to see people, you know, there's this idea that mass society is going to continue going on like it's going. And what's probably going to happen is you're going to have more like cooperatives and collectives out in the country and stuff, with like 5,000 people, all who share some same basic values, taking care of one another. The government may still be there. There might still be like a United States federal government that thinks it runs everything, but it will become less capable of handling welfare. It'll become less capable of handling infrastructure. It'll become less capable of enforcing the law. And you're going to see, not to sound like an ANCAP, but you're going to see, like, at the local level, a lot of these problems organically being solved by sort of tribal communities. And that's, you know, and with enough of that, you eventually have the makings of authentic secession later on.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's the sort of thing where, going back, I mean, here in the Midwest, you know, in Appalachian stuff, you can still drive by and see the Grange Hall and stuff like that. I mean, the idea that before we had Social Security, before we had, you know, insurance for people who got hurt or unemployment, you had these, these mostly rural communities that were able to come together in collectives, be able to raise money if there was a natural disaster, or if someone was hurt, or if someone, you know, a father died and there was a widow and orphans that needed to be cared for and stuff like that. That this seems to me like, I mean, we're not becoming Amish, but there is the possibility to return to what traditionally we had, because if you look at, you know, nationalism is organic. It's not just one family. It's lots of families that come together with a shared ethnicity, a shared culture, shared values, being able to treat one another like one big happy family. You know, and we can have, everyone's got that crazy uncle, and likewise in the pro-white cause, you know, not everyone's entirely on the same page, and there are some differences of opinion on, you know, I mean, it's just absolutely amazing sometimes. You know, as much as I love ideology, we've got guys that have declared war on each other, you know, between, you know, even National Socialists, between Strasserites and Hitlerites. And then you've got, you know, other people that, you know, are phalangists. They're willing to go to war with each other, basically, when we don't control a town, let alone an entire region, to dictate economic policy on what our trading is going to be for you know, rare natural minerals with Afghanistan or something like that. Like, it's kind of, people get a little ahead of themselves, but with turning into a local organic community, it seems to be, it's reverting back to the natural state of humanity. I mean, it's what happened after as the Roman Empire. You know, there was no day where it was just, all right, Rome is over. You know, I mean, you know, the Western Empire fell, and then we had Byzantium as an Orthodox Empire, and then that eventually fell and things like that. It seems that when empires fall, this is the natural state of things, and technology is going to make it easier because, I mean, now you can go out and get a loan for $30,000 and get a windmill. Or solar panels, that you can make your own power. I mean, you can dig your own well. I mean, we now, I can sit on my computer and find out everything I need to do to be able to farm any crop that I can grow here. And it's not going to be great the first time, probably. But, you know, you used to have to know some Appalachian granny magic or something like that to be able to do any of this. And technology is going to make it far easier for us as people come together to be able to share these values and have the same dream of an independent homeland, that we've gotten access to resources like never before to be able to make this happen. This isn't the 90s. We don't need to try and, you know, face down the feds or things like that. What we can do is just legally, economically, and culturally secede, like you mentioned with music. You know, we don't need to buy the Jewish producer's music. We don't need to buy the Jewish Hollywood films that promote agendas that are opposed to us. We can make our own content. We can make our own food. We can even make our own power. You know, we can help one another. You know, in Southern Virginia, you know, the Wolves of Vinland, you know, they're pagans, but I know more than a few of those guys. And they've all come together as families, and they've built their own hall. They go ahead and they make their own mead. They have small businesses to be able to fund their efforts, and they have community things for when guys are in financial trouble. You know, they're kind of doing that, and they're pagan. Likewise, Christians can do it, or it can be on a broad pro-white basis, that we have the ability to do what, you know, people even 15 or 20 years ago didn't have the ability to do. So what would you say to people? Because they still exist, of we're going to take back America, we're going to make America white again sort of thing, that are opposed to this devolution process. What would you say to them as the to try and get them on board? Because I think we can all agree the numbers don't lie. We need to be able to think locally and build something real and have a proof of concept. I mean, if we could take over, you know, a county, then it's two counties, then it's half of a state sort of thing. Show people that our governance is better, our model is better, it's better for them and their children and their grandchildren, and we can provide a healthier culture, a healthier lifestyle for them. What would you say to those people that really want to die on the hill of retaking America?
Social and cultural secession precedes political secession. But the first thing I would tell a nationalist who's really stuck on a broadly American attempt at white nationalism is, look, I'm going to stop visiting you if you keep carrying on with this, and I'm going to talk to the nurse and have your pudding taken away. Because I don't think anybody under about 60 still holds to that idea. I guess here and there you have a couple people who are confused, but even then, you know, we just need to demonstrate this. And once they see forward motion with this model, they'll abandon their obsolete broadly American nationalist perspective. Or they'll go Trumpians. You know, those civic nationalists. Which I'm afraid we're going to have to deal with that for some time. It's going to take a while for sort of Trumpian civic nationalism to run its course, and for people to see why that's not the complete solution. I mean, there's a lot of things to get excited about with the Donald Trump phenomenon, but at the same time, it does represent a dangerous half measure towards what we're attempting to achieve, which is a future for our people.
Clint, you know, as we're coming to the end of our show, I want to know your perspective on, because there's people within the alt-right especially, but I've seen it, who have gotten too high on Trump's supply, you know. How do we explain to people that, you know, while Donald Trump attacking political correctness, bringing issues of nationalism up, being against free trade, against interventionism around the world, all these things are great, but how do we make sure that we didn't, you know, we don't lose people, because he seems to be having forward motion. And everyone gets really excited and giddy because the revolution is hard. It's a struggle. It's long term. How do we get people to make sure they don't become? I think it was your article, Matt. Don't become Trump's chumps.
Yeah, that was written way back now. Admittedly, I wrote that article before he went as hardcore as he went. Like, I did not foresee when I wrote that article how amazing Donald Trump would be as far as the implicit promotion of white interests, and, you know, bordering on explicit from time to time. I mean, the man is incredible, and I understand the energy behind him, and I'm supportive of Trump. I voted for Trump. But at the same time, I guess the bottom line, in my opinion, is we have no choice but to be generally supportive, while at the same time also standing by our first principles. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like how a Black Panther might deal with, like, Barack Obama. They might have voted for him. But then in a lot of ways, Barack Obama, over the course of his presidency, has discredited that model better than the Black Panthers themselves ever could. So in a way, you know, following that strategy where we, you know, just be like, okay, well, we'll let Trump do his thing and see how it goes, and watch how that doesn't really solve the problems or answer the questions in the same way Obama didn't solve the problems or answer the questions for Black nationalists. I guess my short answer is we just have to sit back and wait. This Trump thing is much bigger than us, and I for one, am not going to jump out in front of it, in the way of it. And I don't think doing so would be constructive for our cause. I think we need to just kind of sit back and even assist this phenomenon in its development, and then wait for the aftermath, where I think we will have an opportunity for our more complete message to have its exposition.
Well, I think that's a really good thought. I mean, we need to be able to have it in a way that we're showing people that we have the real answers. You know, and as I've said multiple times before, it's like Amazon. You know, you buy something. You know, if you like Donald Trump, you might also like third positionist ethno-nationalism. You know, and I think a lot of people, even if Trump does exactly what he says, he can only be in there for 8 years, and then the GOP is still controlled from the top down by Jewish interests, by financiers, by internationalists. So they're going to be looking, you know, at most this is a 4 or 8 year phenomenon, even if he does everything he said. But those people are going to have to go somewhere. And hopefully I believe they really will come into our ranks as we build our party to be a voice for white America, to be able to have this vision of true nationalism, you know, of peace and of sovereignty. So I'm excited. So Matt, as we come to the end, this is the last show of the week. So give us a good final thought to go off on for people to chew on over the course of the weekend.
My final thought is don't feel like you have to choose between being supportive of Trump and being supportive of a more rigorous nationalism. You can have both, and that's what I don't think, you know, these people that are trying to be hostile towards Trump, I don't think that's constructive at this point. You can't force a timeline. This political revolution is a generational thing. I think so many people with this alt-right phenomenon and Trump, I think they've gotten giddy, and they don't realize that this is going to take years and decades for us to build the infrastructure, for us to change hearts and minds. You will have these big shifts like we're having now, where everything seems like it's moving incredibly fast, and it kind of is. But at the same time, you got to kind of step back and look at the big picture and be like, this Trump thing is extremely useful for us. It's great. It's not the whole thing, but you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Well, I like that. I think that's a good final thought. So, Mr. Parrott, it is a pleasure, as always, as you're roving around America, making nationalism real. It's always good to be able to have you to come and join us. And, you know, I wanted to thank all of our listeners. I hope everyone has an absolutely wonderful and amazing weekend. So, hail victory.
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heibach at Radio Area. www.mattheweaver.com.